It's Wednesday, March 13th, 2024, and I'm Dave Sobel. Welcome to the Business of Tech Lounge. Today on the show, we talk about that case of a law firm suing its IT provider with insights from attorney Brad Gross, IDC data on the change of the CISO role. We'll talk cloud storage budgets. We'll also talk about Claude 3 might know it's being tested. We'll recap and discuss my interview with Tabitha Scott, and a preview of this weekend's interview with Mike Semmel. I want to do a call out to my vendor patrons. In fact, there's space for your logo to go right here. Want to advertise the easiest way to the largest collection of MSPs in a podcast? You can do so easily by visiting patreon.com/MSP radio and signing up. Our Patreon vendor supporters will get shout-outs in all the live shows, mentions on the regular Business of Tech show, as well as access to me and additional insights, information, and materials all at patreon.com/MSP radio. A reminder, I'm going to be taking questions and comments throughout the show, so make sure to put them in chat. We'll have a dedicated questions section in the show, both with your live questions and listener-submitted ones. But now, our top story. Let's talk about a piece in Cyber Scoop. A White House advisory group recommends creating new economic incentive programs and liability protections to improve cybersecurity in critical infrastructure. The group found that market forces alone are insufficient to prioritize cybersecurity, and stakeholders are unaware of existing federal assistance. The report suggests financial incentives, increased education about federal services, and the development of liability protections for information sharing. The report comes from the National Security Telecommunications Advisory Committee, which is made up of representatives from the nation's largest telecommunication companies, as well as cybersecurity firms. Now, why do we care? Market forces alone don't support cybersecurity. This is an important finding. For every discussion we have about cybersecurity, there's this implicit thought that the market demands it. Well, government researchers are now saying it doesn't. Market forces alone are not going to do the deal. And this is important because remember, they're focusing on critical infrastructure. If you're a managed services provider or an IT services firm, you need to think about the fact that if you want to be selling cybersecurity, you want there to be other forces like regulation. You need those other conditions, regulation, insurance conditions, to drive cybersecurity sales because market conditions alone aren't going to do it. This is an important set of insights as you think about your market opportunities and where you're going to spend your time. I get it. There's cybersecurity opportunity here, but market opportunities alone will not push it based on market factors. Now, let's talk about that case last week. As I reported last week, a Sacramento law firm, Mastinani Holsted, is suing a computer firm, Lantech LLC, for over $1 million after falling victim to a ransomware attack. The lawsuit names Lantech LLC, former owner Terry Berg, and backup data storage company Acronis Incorporated as defendants. The attack is attributed to a Russian-speaking group known as Black Basta, which has been responsible for numerous ransomware attacks. Mastinani Holsted claims negligence and breach of contract and seeks damages for economic losses caused by the cyber attack. So let's quote from Yahoo News. Quote, "The firm, which includes lawyers handling cases for law enforcement officers accused of disciplinary transgressions or crimes, said in the lawsuit that it retained Lantech after informing the company, quote, of the nature of the plaintiff's business as a law firm and the importance of cybersecurity for its computer network and data. Under the terms of the agreement, Lantech, quote, was responsible for the cloud-based backup of plaintiff's servers and data, the suit says. On February 24th, 2023, plaintiff began to experience connectivity issues when its employees tried to log into the firm's terminal servers, the suit said. The Mastodonte firm notified Lantech, which reported, quote, the problem had been resolved, end quote, but computer network difficulties continued, the suit says. On February 26, plaintiff suffered a major outage of its servers and computer network, which resulted in the loss of access to its servers and data, the lawsuit says. Plaintiff reported the outage to Lantech, and it was ultimately determined that plaintiff's cybersecurity, for which Lantech was responsible, was breached and that malicious ransomware had been installed, blocking access to plaintiff's servers and data. Thereafter, a ransom demand was made by a group known as Black Basta for plaintiff to recover and access to its data. The law firm attempted to recover its data through Acronis, quote, but discovered that its data backup had been deleted, the lawsuit said. Quote, as a result, plaintiff was unable to restore its computer network with the data backup and eventually was forced to pay a ransom to the hackers to regain access to its data, the suit says. Even though defendants Lantech and Berg were aware that plaintiff's network was experiencing a cybersecurity attack and the plaintiff was concerned about the security of its data, they failed to take steps to prevent the deletion of the cloud-based backup of plaintiff's data, which they'd arranged with Acronis. Now, Acronis issued an official statement on the matter and contacted the Business of Tech directly. This is that statement. Quote, as a cyber protection company, we take security very seriously. No Acronis systems or networks were compromised. Acronis and its partner deny any responsibility for what happened to the law firm's systems and its data. Our investigation revealed that access credentials may have been compromised outside of our systems and used to delete the firm's backups and execute a ransomware attack. Password protection is the responsibility of the customer. Acronis has not been served with the lawsuit and will not be commenting further on this litigation. Now, I'm no lawyer, so I reached out to one, Brad Gross, to get his opinion. What was his take? Is it notable to include the software vendor? What is the general timeline for a case like this? Brad gives a lot of information and was very detailed, so let's hear from Brad.
But my first thought is, this complaint is not going to survive a motion to dismiss. This thing is going to be dismissed first round. I'm not saying it wouldn't be refiled in a better way, but first round it's going to be dismissed, and for the reasons I'm about to talk about, okay? I think that there are a lot of deficiencies and problems with this, and as far as its impact on MSPs, hang on, we'll get to that in a moment. Now, first things first. The first thing I noticed about this complaint is that the plaintiff, the law firm, broke a cardinal rule, which is it is representing itself. The plaintiff is the same party that got hacked. So I don't know why they're doing it. I don't know why they filed a lawsuit representing themselves. It's a problem. Not only is it because, well, you know, can you be impartial when you represent yourself? Let's put that aside. Judging just by the facts, the allegations that are in the complaint, this attorney clearly does not understand IT, how systems integrate, the value of cloud-based solutions, the scope or limitations of managed services. But that's what this case is all about, right? Managed services, the scope and value of cloud and cloud-based services. He doesn't get it. It's very clear. So without that knowledge, the lawyers just sort of went full force into the courtroom, filed this and said, you know, I deserve money. It's not going to happen, at least not on the surface of the face of this complaint. Now, let's talk about what this is really happening. What's going on behind the scenes first? All of your viewers should understand this. The relationship that they have with their customers, all MSPs, the relationships that they have with their customers is based on contract. It is a creature of contract. If it's in the contract, then you have to do it. If it's not in the contract, then you don't. Right away, we notice in this case, we're talking about an oral agreement, an oral contract. Is it enforceable? Well, sure, oral agreements are enforceable, but what are the terms? What's the scope? What are the services that are supposed to be provided? When were they supposed to be provided? What were the limitations of those services? We don't know, nor does the lawyer who filed this complaint, because it was an oral agreement. So right away we see they're basing a claim of negligence on an oral agreement without any underlying facts. That is reason number one why the complaint's going to be dismissed, but it's also a sign of don't use oral agreements. We'll get to that in a moment. Now, second, what your viewers also have to understand is that in the MSP world, in the managed services world, there is no such thing as a fiduciary duty. Fiduciary duty, you might have heard about it. It's that higher duty, a higher calling that exists between a professional and its customer. You see this in the medical field. You see this in the law field. You might see it in the accounting field. There's a fiduciary duty to sometimes go above and beyond what's right in front of the parties. MSPs do not have a fiduciary duty. It is a creature of contract. The relationship is a creature of contract, which brings us back to the first point. If you have an oral contract and you don't know what the terms are, you certainly aren't going to have a fiduciary duty, and you're not going to be able to prove what the terms, you know, really should be and whether they were breached. Third, there is no allegation in this contract, in this complaint rather, no allegation that the breach would not have occurred if security was actually implemented. Nowhere in here does it say that. Instead, what the plaintiff says is, look, I had cybersecurity needs, and the MSP, well, they know about cybersecurity, and then I got hacked, so someone should pay me. Nowhere does it say that, well, had these services been in place, I would not have been breached. Had these services been in place, my backup would have worked. Doesn't say that. Probably because the lawyer doesn't know. Reason number 310 why a lawyer should not be representing himself. Fierce. He makes accusations of negligence based on the MSP's advice to move his law firm from an on-premise storage solution to the cloud, Acronis. Let me make something very clear. There ain't nobody who is going to persuasively argue to a court that moving from a physical storage facility to a cloud-based facility is grounds for negligence. No one can persuasively argue that. The cloud is more secure, more versatile, more manageable. I mean, it's more reliable. So for those reasons, you know, when he makes a big deal in the complaint about, oh, they moved me to the cloud and this happened. No, that can't be it's not going to be a foundation for negligence. Reason number next why this thing is going to be dismissed. It is interesting that he says that the data backup didn't exist. It's not clear whether that's because the MSP didn't configure something correctly, or maybe Acronis didn't do something correctly, or maybe the plaintiff itself did something to undermine or somehow prevent the backup from occurring. That's something that needs to be looked into. That's going to be, I think, the major focus point of this case. Is this a warning sign for MSPs, right? Are MSPs like going to look at this case and go, oh man, we're in trouble? Well, yes and no. Let me tell you yes first. Yes. If you're an MSP that doesn't use contracts, if you're an MSP that does things on a handshake, if you're an MSP that thinks, oh, we can have an oral agreement because I've known this person for years. Well, here's your future. This is it, folks, right here. Your name will be right over here somewhere, okay, under defendant. That's your future if you are relying on an oral agreement. No, this is not your future if you have solid agreements in place. It is not your future if you have a master agreement that governs not just law, but realities of the industry, manages expectations about what the customer is going to get and what it's not going to get, what the services are and what their limitations are. If you're that type of MSP, this is not your future, okay? Your future's looking pretty bright.
I appreciated how detailed Brad was, and I wanted to make sure to include as much of his answer as I could. By the way, I did edit that a little bit, just so you know. Now, why do we care? Again, I'm no lawyer. Why I wanted to get us an analysis, and as Adrian commented about a lawsuit, we want to understand what's going on with lawsuits, and that's an important observation for us to understand. I want to comment first on Acronis. I have no expectation that the company did anything wrong here. A partner used their software, The credentials were compromised, customer lost data. They don't have control over that, and passwords are the responsibility of someone who isn't them. As Brad observed, seems the customer here is pretty lacking on a basic understanding of IT. Now, let's assume for a moment that the case isn't thrown out, or that we're projecting to the refiling of the case. The inclusion of the responsibilities for the software provider as well as the managed services provider does intrigue me. I don't think this is going to be a case that sets precedence, but it's something to watch out for. I'm going to keep an eye on this case, and I will report back. Look forward to continuing the conversation of that. Remember, if you've got questions or comments, put them in the chat. We're going to do a question section later in the show. Now, let's revisit that interview I had with Tabitha Smith from the weekend. I've pulled out a particular clip. Let's roll it now. One of the things that's kind of is an interesting problem for most leaders, you know, in particular, it's exacerbated by those of us in IT because of the amount of change that we're dealing, is oftentimes, you know, leaders in organizations, particularly small ones, get these ideas of, oh, I'm going to try this new thing. And it becomes a little bit of a flash in the pan, or they come back from some conference and they get excited about it and it is sustainable. You know, for a leader who recognizes the need to shift their management approach, like, what are those initial steps that you recommend to for them to take that will both be successful and also make sure that they retain?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to go back to the fact that businesses are living organisms, and every business crisis, there is a nature there. So let's go back to that fact that for every business crisis in the world today, nature has an answer. And if you look at the growth curve, at the growth cycles, then you're going to put the right solution in at the right time. Now, what I mean by that is if you bring back a very creative solution that you want to create more things like design thinking, human design, you know, that's a very creative thing. You would want to plug that in if you're in a mature organization, like a cash cow. You would want to jump onto the next curve. So that's the right timing to do design thinking and things like that. Whereas if you have total quality management, or you're streamlining things and you're becoming more agile and lean, Six Sigma, you want to do that as you're growing up from birth into growth phases, right? That's the time you want to implement that, because you need to scale. And so you have to simplify and stabilize. So putting the right technique at the right time. If you go in with something that's, here's what Southwest did last year at the holiday fiasco. They had a CEO that was constantly being more and more and more efficient. And so he didn't think ahead, hey, I need to leap on that new curve. I need to do new technologies. They just kept getting more and more lean. And then they hired a new CEO that was just like him, had been there for 30 years and, you know, had another accounting, you know, streamlining background. Well, there's a place for that. And it's would have been in the birth phase and the growth phase, not in the maturity phase. So if you want to implement something that's going to work, if you want to implement something that's going to be powerful to your clients, then make sure and figure out where are they in the growth cycle right now. And then what you want to be selling is something that is just the next step ahead.
Now, I really love digging into business thought leaders like Tabitha to get some insight. So why do we care? Her big takeaway for me was this idea that businesses are organic and thus also ever-changing. One of the things, particularly for those of us in managed services, is we spend a ton of time on process and on discipline and standardization. And there's an implication there that we can get things to a static point where everything will always be fine. And ultimately, that's not actually true on living, ever-changing organisms. And if we view our business that way, it gives us the perspective to understand that businesses do always change. And perhaps we want to plan for that continual ever-changing and make adjustments based on that. We understand where we are in our growth process, where we might go, and what comes next from that. That, for me, was a real key insight into Tabitha's perspective. I do encourage you to dive into that interview a little bit further. Reminder, we are going to make sure to take questions today. Put them in chat if you've got them. We'll be taking them very shortly. Now, I want to do a story roundup. Stories that I wanted to include on the show, particularly for today. A recent IDC survey with security leaders across 17 countries confirms that the role of CISOs is evolving. They're now responsible for both cybersecurity and enabling business initiatives. The survey also highlights the importance of strategic thinking for CISOs and the expanding nature of their role, including legal and compliance advisory, risk management, and customer support. The survey also reveals that the priorities of CISOs and CIOs are not always aligned when it comes to IT and security. According to a report commissioned by cloud storage solution Wasabi, enterprise customers spend nearly half of their cloud data storage budgets on fees related to operations, retrieval, transfer, egress, and analytics. The other half goes to capacity procurements. Many respondents exceeded their cloud object storage budgets last year and expect spending to increase this year. Price and billing complexity are the top reasons for customer dissatisfaction, highlighting the need for better visibility into fees and cost optimization. Anthropic's Claude 3, which is another large language model, has caused a stir in the AI community by seemingly demonstrating a form of metacognition during testing. The model recognized when it was being evaluated and identified an out-of-place sentence, leading to discussions about the true capacity and capabilities and limitations of language models. While some are impressed by this level of awareness, others attribute it to pattern matching alignment data or reinforcement learning through human feedback. And I've got interesting data from SaaS Alerts. They commented on the Russian cyber attack on Microsoft 365, noting that beginning on March 7th, SaaS Alerts witnessed an increase of over 50% above the late February average activity on their event types, which indicates password spray, brute force, and non-interactive sign-in attacks. So, why do we care? Particularly for smaller organizations, I want you to consider more the idea of the CISO and CIO rolled together as a single role. They need to be in alignment, and particularly as you're smaller, they're probably very combined. I don't think you can have a virtual information officer without a virtual security officer combined with that. And it's a takeaway that I thought was important from that particular set of research. I also wanted to highlight that cloud storage cost management is part of the offering that you should consider as you're doing vendor management. You'll want to make sure that you're helping your customers understand where their investments and costs go, particularly as it appears only half their spend actually goes to the data storage. And finally, why do we care? Let's not overread into Claude's awareness. I think the model has definitely shown a level of sophistication, but its ability to understand context is one of the things we're hoping for out of AI models. So it's good news to see it there, but I don't think it's necessarily anything more than the continued evolutions of the models. Remember, we are taking those questions. You can still submit anytime in the chat window, or submit for next week if you're watching the recording, sending to question@mspradio.com. We'll go ahead and take them live now. Let's hear our first submitted question.
Dave, I was speaking with an AI service provider who created several applications using Microsoft Azure Copilot and OpenAI for banks and healthcare clients. They came out of the custom code space. Should MSPs try to partner with these code developers for bringing custom or near custom AI projects to their clients?
Steve, I love the partnership question. So philosophically, I'm going to say I always think solution providers, IT services firms need to partner on capacity that they don't have. Whether or not they choose to go with a specialized provider like you outlined, or leverage something like distribution to get that partnership is going to be up to them. It's probably a little easier and more scalable to do it through distribution versus the idea of doing it through those intimate relationships. That said, the ability to to develop one of those relationships with like a code generation specialist or an AI specialist house is probably going to bring deeper insights and better levels of engagement. So it's, while more difficult, probably the right way. But the generalized answer is always partner when you don't have capacity. Your best role as an IT services firm is being that conductor to help connect your customers to solutions, regardless of how it's delivered. That does not necessarily mean that you have to do everything yourself, but you want to be the best referral and answer engine you possibly can. Let's hear our second submitted question today.
Do you have any advice for MSPs on how to up their marketing and sales game using AI tools? Are there any tools or services you recommend looking at?
So I don't necessarily recommend tools and services specifically, because I find that in my role as an analyst and market viewer, I'm not able to do the good hands-on requirements to give you good reviews. Now, that said, I will tell you a couple of principles that I do have around marketing and the way that I think about it. The first thing I'm going to tell anyone in this space is having a marketing system of any kind and putting discipline around it is going to beat no system every day of the week. And in fact, you need to recognize that you're doing a system of marketing activities over a period of time, not specific single marketing tactics. So from a tools perspective, they're actually far less important than making sure that you're leveraging marketing over time consistently. I'm going to tell you that you're going to look for things that help you systemize that, that use content in multiple different ways as efficiently as possible, and that are going to help you reach a specific target audience that you've identified. Remember that if you're identifying a marketing target of anyone with money, you are far too broad, and that you need to be much more specific about the people that you are targeting as you think about your marketing strategies. We had a third submitted question. Let's hear that one.
Aware of any simple, easy-to-use customer service tools for small MSPs to deflect tickets?
So it's interesting. Again, I don't make tool recommendations, but I do want to get at the core of this question. Think about the idea of deflecting tickets. That's not necessarily what I'm going to advise anyone in this space. First off, I'm going to give you two thoughts. Tickets are an awkward construct put together by providers. What you want to deliver is service. You generally use tickets to do it, but the more you can insulate your customers from that, the better you're going to do. And second, I'm going to dissuade you from the idea of deflecting tickets. Remember, you actually want to engage your customers as much as possible. Every opportunity to engage them, answer their questions, and solve their problems is a good thing for you to have that touch point. Now, we know as good service providers, we want to reduce the number of issues that our customers are seeing, but note that's different than the number of communications we have. So we want to make sure that we're not doing things to deflect tickets. We're trying to minimize the number of incoming broken service requests versus deflecting their conversations. So I will say these are great questions. I want to recognize that Adrian also recognizes that Brad the lawyer has great insights. I too think very highly of Brad, and I wanted to make sure that we had him on the show in order to give us particular insights there. And I really did appreciate both his insights and you listening. Got any other questions? Put them in chat. I am going to be here taking those questions today, and I want to make sure that I answer all of them. Now, we're going to go ahead, and as we do that, I want to highlight our upcoming interview. I want to highlight Mike Semmel, who examines the change to CMMC 2.0 and its potential costs to MSPs. Here's a preview of that interview.
CMMC is going to affect about 300,000 defense contractors, and they're saying, these are government estimates, not my guesses, that roughly half of them are going to be at level one. And that means that they don't have what's called controlled unclassified information. CUI in CMMC or in the defense world is the equivalent of like PHI, protected health information in healthcare, PII, personally identifiable information that's covered under other laws. So half of the defense contractors don't have that. So think of somebody mowing the lawn at an Air Force base and they're an outside contractor. They're not going to have that kind of sensitive information, or if they're sweeping the floors or whatever. So roughly half of the contractors in the defense contracting industry.
Mike always brings his A game in terms of insights. That interview will be coming out on the main podcast feed and YouTube channel on the weekend. But a reminder, my Patreon supporters already have this video, and you can get this, all my interview content early as a supporter. If you visit patreon.com/MSB radio, you can sign up and support the show directly and get this content. And vendors, remember, you can support the show too. I have this new option. We can put your logo here right on screen and get a shout out on every live show. It's a simple monthly subscription. You can visit patreon.com/MSB radio for more information. And remember, listeners, you too can support the show. It's super easy. Like, share, and follow on your favorite platforms. If you make sure to support the show by telling everyone else what great coverage and information you're getting from the business of tech. Remember, you can support directly with our Give What You Want model at patreon.com/MSP radio. And if you have a question, make sure to send it in at question@MSPradio.com. We answer those questions every week when this show is live. The shows come out available on the podcast feed on Saturday, so that if you missed it in the live show, you can catch it on the replay. I do appreciate everyone who joined me today live. Look forward to talking to you again next week. Have a great rest of your day.